King Wave, Spock, Spear, Lock is acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very harsh. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher Batliff, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wet, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. Welcome to episode 589 of Trek Talk, and I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And before we get too far, I'd like to go around and introduce my plethora of Trekksperts. And let's start out in Las Vegas with Charles. How are you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good, sitting with the crazy weather, waiting to talk about some Trek, since we didn't talk Trek last week.
I know. Blog Talk Radio was funky again. But don't worry, because that will never happen again.
All right.
So they have assured me that their engineers have repaired the problem. And yeah, we will see, won't we? And let's swing around to Portland, because I have a triple play out in Portland. Everyone's back together again. Let's start off with David. How are you doing tonight, David?
I think you meant twivel play, but that's cool.
Triple, that could be.
I'm doing okay, actually. It's been quite interesting what had transpired in the last couple of weeks. But, yeah, everything's doing okay now, so we're good.
We're good. Ready for some Trek talk, and it's Friday's Eve, so that's good. We also have with us in Portland as well, we have Paul. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Hey, Uncle Jim, doing all right, man. Doing well. Ready for some fun.
It's going to, and we have two Trek episodes tonight, so it's going to be double the fun. And also out in Portland, we have Eric. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Well, Jim, it's like Rainer said, you know, we're only going to get one shot at this. I trust you'll all make it count. Red alert.
Exactly.
Black alert.
If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you guys can find all of our shows at trektalking.com, and there's all kinds of fun stuff there, so go and check that out. And you'll notice there that there's a link to our Facebook page, and our Facebook page is also Trek Talking Podcast. And if you go there, you will see pinned to the top of the page a really awesome Live Long and Prosper saying, hey, dudes, where are you listening from? And all you got to do is go there and drop a little line and tell us where you're listening from. Try to leave some emojis, because that gets my attention. And if you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, that means that you are going to be mentioned in a future fan shout out. And you want to tune in live, or you can download the podcast later to hear your name mentioned. So, Eric, would you like to get us started off with our fan shout outs for this week?
Would I? I'm going to head right now straight away to the very cradle of Western civilization, to Athens, Greece, where we're saying hello to top fan Reedy Dora this week. Reedy Dora is saying hello to us from a place that I was in not too long ago, and it is a very beautiful place and certainly has thousands of years of history behind it, so it's a pretty cool joint. Thank you so much for carrying our torch over there, Reedy. We really appreciate it. We're also saying hello this week to Jacob Kyler, who's sending greetings from the Czech Republic and definitely getting Jim's attention with that beautiful Czech flag and a Live Long and Prosper sign. Thank you, Jacob, for saying hello to us from the amazing Czech Republic. Also saying hello this week to top fan David Fable, who says Italy with an exclamation point. I mean, Italy is kind of one of those countries that requires an exclamation point. So, David, I get where you're coming from. And, of course, top fan status means that you interact with us a ton on our Facebook page, and we really do appreciate that. our new Facebook page. Thank you so much, David, for saying hello to us. And Jacoba Kortikas is saying hello to us from the Netherlands, also known as Holland, specifically in West Friesland. Jacoba, thank you so much for saying hello to us from that beautiful country, which is more than 50% underwater and yet somehow manages to exist. It's truly an engineering marvel. Thank you so much for saying hello. Charles, I'm going to spin that globe over to you, brother.
Oh, thank you, Eric. Let's start off with a warm greeting to top fan Todd Douglas from Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome, Douglas. Welcome, Joe Nesvik, Alaska, born in Juneau, lived in Homer from 92 to 07, currently living in Washington. Welcome to Brian Kane from the San Francisco Bay Area. Oh, Brian, I need to get to your neck of the woods, and I want to head a little north. There's a city uptown I need to visit. And also welcome to Bob Hirschman from Phoenix. Getting a little warm down there, isn't it, Bob? Be ready for the summer. David, who's on your list?
Yeah, I would like to say hello to Tom Bethel from Oregon, USA. Next on my list is hello to Doug Graham from Lewiston, Idaho. Next on my list is Amy Kromaneker from Prescott, Wisconsin. Last on my list is hello to Christopher Lott from Mississippi. Paul, who's on your list?
Thanks, David. Well, you know, we got folks all over the globe who like Star Trek. It's not just an American thing. There's enthusiasm across all longitudes and latitudes. Let's prove that that's true. First of all, we're going to say hello to top fan Andrea Angie Parsons, who's saying hello to us from lovely Hertfordshire in the United Kingdom. That's in the county in the eastern area there. Wonderful spot. Absolutely great. Absolutely gorgeous. Not too far from London, but a lovely spot. So great to hear from you. Wonderful to have you reach out and express your fondness for Star Trek, Andrea. Let's switch hemispheres. Any Hobbit fans in the audience today? If so, you probably have heard of, heard of Wellington, New Zealand before. Wellington is, of course, the capital on the North Island there. Really absolutely just a gorgeous metropolis there. And also home of our good friend Tanya Pijus in Wellington, who is on all the way down there on the other part of the earth, but diligently checking in with Trek Talking, no matter what season of the year it may be down there. Different from us, but it's a Star Trek season down there no matter what. And then we're going to go back over to Europe here. I'm going to get whiplash because we're crossing over the equator back and forth and back and forth. But this time we're going to go off the west coast of Scotland, and we're going to the Outer Hebrides, and we're going to see our friend Callum MacDonald, who lives on one of those islands out there. So it is great to hear from you, Callum. Thanks for being a Star Trek fan, and thanks for lending your enthusiasm to us here at Trek Talking, and listening to the show and checking out our Facebook page. Great to hear from you. Oh, I have seen the Outer Hebrides. I would love to go there. It's on my list of things to get to. One of these fine days during a lovely stormy season, that's where I would like to hang my hat. And then a little bit deeper into the continent of Europe there, here's someone with a great sense of humor and lives in a place that just seems destined to be Star Trek, because our friend Bronco Anyar is saying that they live in Borg, Sweden. Har, 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 har. So that's perfect. You got to be careful with the nanoprobes there, Bronco. You don't want anything to take root if you're not expecting it. So hope that no matter what part of the planet that our fellow fans are residing, that you're having a great time and that you're continuing to follow us and keep up with all the latest developments in Star Trek. I'll pass this over to Uncle Jim.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. I got to apologize. My new puppy dog, who is only 4 months old, I've only had her for 2 days. She's in her crate kind of going crazy right now. You might have heard her. She wants to come out and play, and I'm doing the podcast, so she can't. So hopefully she will quiet down and not disturb us. So I apologize for that. All right, I want to continue on with our fan shout-outs. I want to say thank you and hello to Sarah Barker, who's listening to us in Toledo, Ohio. I also want to say thank you to Scott Poole, who's listening to us in Illinois. We also have a top fan, Christy Moore, who's listening to us in Texas, USA. And last but definitely not least on our list for fan shout-outs, we want to say thank you to Ross Mahoney, who's listening to us in Nebraska. If you guys would like to be mentioned on a future fan shout-out, just head over to our Facebook page and drop us a little line. Emojis catch my attention, so leave some emojis if you definitely want to be mentioned. And then tune in to Trek Talk and hear your name mentioned as a fan of not only Star Trek, but of our podcast. So because of a Blog Talk Radio technical difficulty last week, we could not talk about the episode Face the Strange. So tonight we're going to be talking about Face the Strange and the episode Mirrors, which was last week. We will not be talking about this week's episode until next week's, which is our usual schedule. So we're going to be talking about two. It's going to be Double the Disco tonight. So without any further ado, let's begin. All right, Charles, take it away.
Okay, we moved after Trek Cadet Training up a bit because Jim's been missing it lately. And I got quite a few for this episode. Right off the bat, the title of this episode, Face the Strange. Or put it into context, Turn and Face the Strange. From David Bowie's song, Changes. Which, of course, does follow the theme of this episode because we do have changes that occur. And we got quite a few episodes we touched on because of all these time travel and changes. Discovery, That's All Hope, Part 1, Season 3, Episode 1, Time Traveling with the Red Angel. Discovery, Such Sweet Sorrow, Part 2, Season 2, Episode 14, Battle with Control. 3, Episode 13, Osira Attacks Discovery. Short Treks, Calypso, Season 1, Episode 2, Discovering the Future. I bet that's going to be a topic tonight. Discovery, Mid-Season 1. Somewhere around episode 3 or 4, when we're on board Lorca's ship. And a couple of references. Voyager, Hell, Season 4, Episode 8. We talk about the Krenim Imperium and Krenim Devices. Temporal War.
Excellent.
So, Eric, I think you've got some fan opinions.
I absolutely have some fan opinions. We always like to take a look at what fans think of each episode. And we asked, of course, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best, what did our Facebook fans score Face the Strange? And Lucas Petrick said he gave it a 10 with an exclamation point. Good story. Fun seeing everything that happened and such. Well done. Scott Montgomery also gave it a 10. Top fan Paul Schnell gave it a 7. Eric Sanborn said a 10 for sure, and John X said 10 out of 10. I'm noticing a theme here. Mike Empey said that was an awesome episode. Rayner and Burnham learned to get on the same page. I give it a 9. I was always a sucker for time travel episodes. Lenny Miles said 10, well written and well acted. Wes Huntington said 10. Reg Kanipe said 7. And Najin Tom said 8.5 with an exclamation point. And that, you guys, gives us a combined fan score this week of 9.2, which is extremely respectable, I would say.
I think that's the highest so far for season 5.
I believe that's true. Yep. And I would say that we don't give a lot, or fans don't give a ton of episodes over 9s overall. Like when you look at our you know, overall stats. I mean, there's a few nines out there, but it's not like the fans are overrating things, right?
Exactly.
You get a lot of tens for Strange New Worlds, I think.
I think that's true. That one
picked up a lot of tens, especially last year, where there's a lot of collective enthusiasm where people, you know, really were like, oh, this is clearly one that everybody is digging, right, and really liking. But definitely, I think, less on the other shows, though, for sure.
For Discovery, especially, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. It's interesting to discuss. It will be.
Well, I feel like we could have a whole show, Paul, on why is Discovery rated lower, generally speaking, than other shows, but that's
for
another time.
I know. I mean, when we're off the air for this season, right, for this show, we have a little break, I think we can try to find a way to
dig into
that
a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and hopefully do it in an interesting way that isn't, you know, doesn't leave us all depressed.
Yep.
You know, and you know what, guys? If you would like to hear your opinion mentioned on a fan shout-out, it is so easy. Friday morning at around coffee break time, which would be 10 a.m. Eastern time, when I'm sitting around at work on my break, I will post this question, and I will ask you on a scale of 1 to 10 for the episode. And all you got to do is go to our Facebook page and score it. And then look for Heart Next to Your Name and tune into the podcast and hear your opinion on the air. It's really easy and it's super fun. And it gets a lot of fans talking as well.
Jim, that was a really a very deft and smooth way of emphasizing that you're not on social media at work. I was on my coffee break.
Clarifying,
you never know who's listening.
That's right. I never know who's out there. So
yeah,
I'm
on
my
coffee
break.
I would never check my phone when I'm working. No.
Never do it. So you guys can look for that question around 10 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow, and you can answer that question. And that'll be about the episode that's on tonight, which I believe is called Whistle Speak, I think is the title. And that'll be up tomorrow morning. So get head over there and answer that question. So I had a couple things I wanted to talk about. Now, last week, the podcast was canceled, but we talked for a few minutes, you know, amongst ourselves because we weren't on the air. But one of the things I definitely want to touch on is I want to talk with Eric about this whole Calypso tie-in. And do you think that this episode, when Rayner and Burnham jump into the future, and there we see Zora, and there we see the Discovery, and we see that she's dreaming. How do you think that ties into Calypso, if it does at all?
Well, I think that if it were to tie into Calypso, it would be thematically for sure, because I don't know, in that particular scene when they all of a sudden hear that kind of echoey playing of K Sarah Sarah, it instant audio cue back to Calypso. So to me, that seemed really cool to have that, like, you know, connection back to that moment in an audio format. Now, this supposedly only happens, 30 years after where we already are in Discovery. So it's not like 1,000 years in the future, which I think is where Calypso was supposed to be set. But when Zora says to Burnham and Rayner, she's like, is this another dream? It's clear that she's been dreaming, that the AI has been dreaming at that point, because she asks if this is another dream. And so then the question has come up, I think, on the internet of whether or not Calypso itself, that entire short track, was in fact a Zora dream. And I think that, Jim, you brought up some excellent points when we talked about this kind of amongst ourselves last week. You know, primarily in this episode, we get what you called the Zora vision. You know, it's kind of that overlay of the circular thing with the little sound wave thing that indicates that Zora's doing the talking, I guess, at that point. We also have her kind of, I think, in a dreamy sort of state. You know, I mean, that entire Calypso episode, when we listen to Zora talk, it's kind of with this quiet melancholy that's a little bit dreamy, and I think that she has the same kind of tone and pace and stuff when they go into the future here. So I don't know. I just think that there are some very interesting connections. I don't know that it's in the same, you know, timeline, or whether Calypso was actually real, or whether the Vidresh actually will exist at some point, but I thought it was pretty cool that there was an audio cue that pulled us directly into that, that just like anybody who'd seen that short track was like, okay, yep, I know right where I am.
Yeah, I don't think that it was an accident. I think it was very deliberate, and I don't know if that's true or not, but it definitely was there to make you think, and that's what Star Trek does the best. It makes you think, and it makes you look at things in a different light. And I definitely think they did that to make you think about Calypso and what if. Does AI dream? Was Zora dreaming? And this is the question. And everyone will have a different opinion on it. But, you know, I thought that was a great moment. And, and for those of you who don't know, if you're new to Discovery or if you're new to Star Trek, in between season one of Discovery and season two, they did a series called Short Trek. And Calypso, I think, what was it, Charles? The second episode?
Second episode.
The second episode of season one of Short Treks was Calypso. And then they did four more for season two, in between season two and season three. So
they had four in season one, they had six in season two.
All right. So you guys
got that sorted.
You can check that out. And if you're curious to know what we're talking about, go and check out Calypso and then rewatch Face the Strange and see if what kind of connection you think is going on there. I definitely think there's a connection there because they don't do things by accident or by mistake. They do it by design. So I think it was intentional. And I just wanted to, because Eric, we spent a lot of time talking about Calypso. So
we did because yeah, I mean, we had a ton of fun with Calypso because until that point, we hadn't gone that far into the future, and maybe we still haven't gone that far into the future, but it was like the first time our minds were open to the concept of Star Trek, you know, post-Picard. Like, what does the Federation look like in the future? And it was kind of an exciting time. And then, you know, it was cool when Discovery in Season 3 then went at least 1,000 years of that distance.
Yeah, and we did a whole podcast on it, so I thought it was important to touch on that. Do any of my other Trek experts want to add anything to the Calypso debate?
How about me?
Yes, absolutely, Shannon. You can feel free to jump right in.
Shannon.
Welcome.
Well, I was waiting for an opening, and that was a good one. okay, but I'm glad the idea that it was just a dream, because Calypso, when we saw it originally, is different than watch it now. But I don't want her to be all by herself because everybody's dead. Because my take on that was Control came back, and she distance herself from everybody else since she's got the spear information. So I like the idea that it's just a dream, so that doesn't happen since this future didn't happen if it's a dream.
Exactly. The way they portrayed it in the episode is that when Rayner and Burnham defeated the time bug and stopped it, that particular future where Zora was dreaming never would have happened, and she wouldn't be dreaming. That's the way I took it.
Right. Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, so. I actually, didn't Star Trek or Alex Kurtzman mention something about, like, we're going to be seeing more about what they're going to talk about in Calypso, or, like, they're going to see Calypso in the future or something in, like, a future episode or something?
They did mention that this season would wrap up the debate of Calypso one way or another.
Episode.
And I don't think they wrapped it up. I think they brought it up for fans to question it themselves and come up with the conclusion that they think. Because they didn't specifically wrap it up, but they gave you enough information to draw your own conclusion, which I think Star Trek does wonderfully, absolutely wonderfully. And David, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something that we saw in Face the Strange. as our resident starship person, and that's the fact that we got to go back to the earliest that we've ever gone on Star Trek Discovery, and that was Discovery being built. And Discovery was built on Earth in San Francisco, on mm-hmm. the planet, like we saw the Enterprise being built in Star Trek 2009. It wasn't built in space dock like all the other starships. It was built on Earth, specifically in San Francisco. And I just wanted to get your take on that. What do you think about that? You think that's cool? You think that's bad? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't know how realistic it would be to try and lift a starship out of the atmosphere by just trying to launch from land. But, I mean, we have a hard enough trouble just with a space shuttle. So, to me, looking at a realistic point, I would say that's almost impossible of today's standard. But then again, I understand sci-fi, this is Star Trek, is supposed to be like, what, 23rd century, so they could come up with anti-gravity, and so it would be possibly easy.
Yeah, but there's no reason to build it on Earth, right? Like, you're probably literally bringing the raw materials from, like, an asteroid or somewhere else in the solar system to build the thing.
Yes,
you bring it all the way down to the planet.
So,
it's cool.
Yeah,
you can watch a big book.
Yeah,
and plus all of the structural forces are all different. Like a ship under gravity, like it's
yeah. But that's the thing. You need gravity and able to work on it faster. If you're
no,
up
you
in space
don't.
And zero G, it
no,
would be
you
a lot.
Don't. In the future,
dude,
you
dude,
your...
dude. Seriously, gravity is nothing but a giant pain in the ass. I
it's
mean,
a
I am
big
constantly
pain in the
dropping
ass.
Things. Like you're working on something in your garage, you're dropping the wrench, it falls down. It's just nothing but a pain in the ass.
Nobody likes
just,
gravity.
Like, nobody
you
wants to work like
you
that.
You definitely get things done faster.
No, nobody.
You're gonna have
the boss is going to be yelling at you. He's got to put a spacesuit on. You just forget it. No, you can have a lot more. You get things done more efficiently, and you know, less nonsense. Just do it in orbit for crying out loud. Do it like
so,
I'm working for Eric. I'm not working for you, David. I'm going to go to orbit for Eric and do it.
So
that makes it she can land gravity on her because she does later. So maybe that's why they built it there to make sure that she could survive the gravity.
Maybe. But to answer Jim's question, I think it was just to tie in with the whole 2009 Star Trek. I think Alex Kurtzman likes that show a whole lot more and to try and combine the two genres together. Or I guess not genres, but the two franchises. Because a lot of people are saying that the 2009 is like completely like a mirror universe type situation. So I don't know. To me, it's just, yeah.
No, or maybe because Discovery was a one of a kind ship. It was a they didn't want like the Klingons or somebody to get their hands on the plan, so they built it on Earth so they couldn't.
I'll just say one last thing about this, and it's because I'm an architect, but I'm basically an engineer, and I think like an engineer all the time. And there are a couple of things that suspension of disbelief is hard to do on when you're watching shows like Star Trek, because, you know, you assume that Star Trek takes into consideration the intelligence of its audience and that some people might understand like basic stuff. And so if you have a starship that, for example, goes underwater and then also goes out into space and was built on Earth, you know that like those types of forces are completely different and one thing could never do that. So it only makes sense to actually build starships that never land on planets, because I don't think the NCC 1701 and TOS ever even landed on a planet, right? Like it, in the movies, it crashed in the atmosphere of a planet, but it never landed on a planet.
Voyager did. Voyager landed on a planet.
Well, Voyager has landing gear. Voyager is a science vessel. Voyager is meant to like be able to go down to a planet's surface and like actually explore it.
Yeah,
so
and it's also
way
a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Discovery is a science vessel.
Yeah, and Discovery was inside a planet. And so, I mean, I just wanted to bring that up because that's been a big debate on the internet, is that whole, you know, building Discovery in San Francisco. And I wanted to get your guys' take on that. And, you know, I wanted to ask Charles, what did you think about the Burnham versus Burnham fight that we got to see? Future Burnham facing off against old Burnham.
That was an interesting fight. That would have been an interesting fight scene to put together. They talked about that a little bit in Ready Room, but to sit there and put having to have Shaniqua's double in there, and then having to model Shaniqua in her season one look against her season five look. That was interesting just to see the two of them together in those two different season looks, the different uniforms, the different hairstyles, a little bit of a different attitude in there. That was an interesting change between the two. I think it was definitely a good fight, and I thought it was an interesting way they put it together to see those two go head-to-head. And that's something you don't want to do, because that can cause trouble meeting yourself in time.
And I think one of the things that I liked about that particular scene is that it showed you where Burnham came from and where she ends up, and you can clearly see the difference in the two characters from Captain Burnham all the way back. At that point, I think she was Specialist Burnham, if I remember correctly. And you can definitely see the difference in their attitudes, their demeanors, you know, how much the character has grown. Because it really was a long road getting from there to here.
They said that.
I had to sneak that in there.
But you go from Burnham back, when she'd barely been on the ship, probably a few weeks or less, to changing centuries and being captain. We definitely saw a major change between the two.
Absolutely.
But it was also a good thing for Rayner to use to prove that, yeah, she was scared. She was frightened being around that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That was intimidating.
And I have one more question. Go ahead, Shannon.
I was going to say, did y'all notice that Burnham now has, like, worry lines in her head, like, between her eyebrows, she has, like, stress lines. She did not when she was earlier Burnham. And so that was kind of funny today because I watched that part too, because she still has them, but the other Burnham doesn't have those yet. So.
I love it.
Expressing all those emotions so frequently.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I have one more question I wanted to ask, and I wanted to talk to Paul about
this. Yes, Jim.
And in this particular episode, I really felt that Stamets really, really shined, because if you recall, Stamets has the tardigrade DNA. So we saw in that episode with Harry Mudd, time doesn't affect Stamets like it affects everybody else. So Michael Burnham, Rayner, and Stamets were outside of the time changes, and this gave Stamets an opportunity to really do a lot of things that we hadn't seen from this character. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Stamets in this episode.
Well, brother, I don't know about tardigrade DNA or whatnot that much, you know, but what I'd like to do is talk about Anthony Rapp, the actor, on here, because I think this guy brings it when it comes to so often a lot of the characters on this franchise seem like they're really holding back, and they're either very subdued or they're just kind of drifting along. And that's why a character like Rayner has been so refreshing to me, because you've got a guy with a lot more emotions to them, is a little bit more of a contrarian, which I think you need. We have everybody getting along so harmoniously sometimes it gets a little tepid. And I just think that Anthony Rapp in this particular episode, he just brought it. I think he did a great job. I like the fact that he is able to assess and figure out what's going on really, really quickly. And he gets a sense of the desperation of circumstances. And when he plays being freaked out, like when he's just like, okay, we have to really do this thing and we have to do it really quickly and we have very little time to get it taken care of. I mean, it's just, his panic is infectious to the other characters and it's infectious to the audience. You know, he's just great. He's the dude is just full Scorpio. He's just awesome.
I just think he's got, you know, a lot of stage training in his background, and it really comes across. He's able to really work the specific emotions of the scene. He's able to really not take away from everyone else in like an ensemble scene, but he's able to really clearly just play those moments and make it really interesting and effective. I mean, you buy him as somebody who's a technical professional, like an engineer, somebody who is a scientist. I don't know that I do. Somebody like Tilly, I don't buy her as a scientist, just because her manner is not somebody who's like serious or she seems like she's reading dialogue. She doesn't seem like to me like she's reading a script. She doesn't seem to me as an actress convincingly like she knows what she's talking about, like she's got any kind of like, you know, scientific training. She seems like she's just kind of reading it without any meaning or belief to it. Anthony Rapp, I believe everything he says. It's like he seems like he's completely well-versed, and to him, these scientific explanations or pseudoscience or whatever, they make sense. And because he delivers it so convincingly, you buy it. And I think it adds a lot more gravitas and realism to the scene. So to me, I mean, we'll hopefully talk more about the episode itself and not these little slices of minutiae that we've been doing, right? I mean, because so far we've just been talking about little tiny bits of the episode and not the episode itself. But I think in what for me is like the best episode of the season so far, Anthony Rapp's a standout. I think he just did a phenomenal job. Really like Stamets as a character a lot.
Well, the scene where he's talking to Jet Reno and he says, well, if I was stuck in a time vortex, would I need Heisenberg compensators, blah, 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 blah. And she tells him what to do. And she says, you're not stuck in a time vortex, are you? He's like, hell no, not me. No, I'm just hypothetically.
Yeah, but he's great at doing that thing where, like, you know, a lot of times on this show you see Michael Burnham having to do this constantly, right? Because the writers will do a thing where the characters basically have to problem solve what's happening in real time by thinking out loud,
right?
Dialogue, right?
Like, and on the
right? I mean, they did that a couple of weeks ago, right? When they're on that, you know, and they're just, what is that audio I'm hearing? Is it somebody who's not on mute?
Sounds like somebody's got a TV on or something.
A TV. Could somebody hit mute? Everyone who's not talking hit mute?
Yeah.
That'd be
cool. I am trying to find out who that is.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, anyway, it's just super annoying. But that's me. I'm very candid. my point is when Stamets is thinking out loud like that, like in that scene Jim just mentioned, right, you believe it because he's like that. You can see the gears working in his head and you totally buy it. And you can see that this is a guy who's frantically trying to beat the clock and save everyone's bacon before it's too late. And I would love more Jet Reno this season before, you know, the curtain comes closing down. I think she's great. And they have nice rapport together. You know, I think they're both strong assets to the show. So I agree. I think their scene was great.
Yeah, I agree completely. So I wanted to talk about these individual scenes because a lot of times when we talk about the episode, we don't get a chance to touch on a lot of these things that I think are important to Star Trek fans. So that's why I wanted to do that, because there's a lot of things in this episode that I wanted to make sure that we talked about. So now that we've talked about the things that I thought were important, let's get down to Greedy, the episode. And Eric, you want to jump in and start us off?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm kind of with Paul. I think this was one of my favorite episodes of the season. Absolutely my favorite episode of the season, including the one that comes after this. Now, in hindsight, I thought the pacing of this episode was really cool. And I think one thing that maybe Discovery is doing a little bit better than it used to do is it's kind of like placement of emotional moments amongst the action and stuff. I mean, there are misses like the sand bike thing, but then there are times that like the actual emotion of the characters comes out in a less awkward way than I think it used to. Paul, I'll just respond to one thing you said real quick. Now I'm thinking about it, which is about Tilly. And I do not disagree with you in terms of new Tilly. I feel like actually season one and maybe even season two Tilly, I actually believed her a little bit more as a scientist because her awkwardness kind of came through, and you could tell she was super smart and she knew what she was talking about.
Good point. She was more convincing back then. She really was a more believable character.
Yeah, the new Tilly is kind of a different character, and you kind of have to, like, just think about her a little bit differently, and I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure if it's the actress or if it's the writing.
I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing on Tilly, man. Does it seem to you like she's developed some kind of, like, God forgive me, California Valley Girl accent a little bit, where she's kind of like being more contemporary? I mean, it takes me out of the show when somebody is talking like I would hear somebody in Starbucks talking, right? Where she's just really friendly, and I'm like, where did that come from?
So here's what I will say. I think Awkward Tilly was totally awesome and relatable and was somebody that a lot of people was, like, literally their favorite character on Discovery. And I think it was because of Mary Wiseman's delivery of the lines that were being written for that character at that time. I think two things have happened. I think that, you know, Mary Wiseman took a lot of time off of the show and then came back. And I think that her delivery has changed, yes. I also think the writing for Tilly has changed. I think that they've tried to kind of, like, update her and give her this sort of, like, backstory of being in Starfleet Academy. But if there's one major way to me that Discovery is failing right now, and it starts to show up in this episode and it also shows up in the next episode, is that they're starting to, like, tell us instead of showing us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're being like, yeah, Tilly's totally in Starfleet Academy and things are going great, but they haven't even shown us a single scene. Like, there's no context for having her be a instructor there. And so therefore in our minds, the character of Tilly hasn't actually graduated yet. She's just like a slightly different version of the Tilly that we've already seen, who supposedly went somewhere and came back and was supposed to be different, but we don't understand why she's different.
It's like Culber, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but it's like Culber is, I'm having a spiritual awakening. And you're like, well, okay, you're telling us this, but based on what we've seen you do, I mean, it just seems like it's really, it's a lot of exposition. We can save that for there, but I just went off on a whole total tangent.
Well, that's okay.
It just seems to me like, Stamets, more convincing as a scientist member of Starfleet. I believe this is a guy who has tremendous training, who went to school for a jillion years, who it's like, if you're going to start taking off conduits and repairing things, I'm like, dude, do it. But when I see Tilly coming in and taking off, pieces of hatch coverings trying to fix stuff, I'm like, please get her away from that. I think she's going to, like, spill a milkshake into it. That's what I'm worried about, right? I don't think she's a professional. And I agree. She was more believable as a character in those early seasons, so I don't know what they're trying to do, but it's weird.
So,
when she was quote, like, a hormonal space rabbit instead of, like, technobabble?
Yeah, lots of technobabble.
Yeah.
Yeah, before she was talking about the, Hormonal Space Rabbit and other Short Treks. And that was my favorite Tilly. I watched that one sometimes. I'm just going to laugh. I watch that episode a lot.
Yeah, she used to make us laugh and kind of like her, like I was saying, her awkwardness made her more relatable because we all felt like, oh my gosh, if somebody like Tilly can be on the bridge of a starship, then maybe like some of us weirdos could be there too. So anyway, we sort of degraded into Tilly a bunch there, but like other thoughts that I have about the episode are that I think it's a cool exploration of past and present selves sort of meeting one another, Michael Burnham in the kind of direct sense, but there's also kind of like we get a reminder of how different Book and Michael Burnham's relationship used to be in this episode. And she kind of is reminded of the fact that, like, damn, this guy looks good with his shirt off, so I thought that was kind of salient and it kind of like, I think is going to be a thing that becomes more of a thing over the season here. I think we're seeing a reconnection of Burnham and Book as a pair. And I think that that's kind of cool because, one of the things that we've talked about in the past is that all previous Star Trek captains that we have not had that kind of like close connection to any one person, right? We get Kirk having flings all the time. We get Picard having a couple ladies he's interested in. We get probably Sisko's the closest one, and he loses his wife in like the first freaking episode, and then, you know, ends up with Cassidy later, and that thing falls apart for various reasons. And so anyway, you know, not without going through all of them, we kind of don't have a really good example in Star Trek of a Star Trek captain who is consistently involved with somebody and they are an integral part of their lives while they are captaining a spaceship. So I'm actually kind of interested in bringing Book back into this story a little bit and like reinvigorating his character, because I felt like he had kind of fallen by the wayside. And then, yes, I don't want to take too much time, but last but not least, I'll just say the Krennum time bug. Oh my God, you guys. So this is our very first actual weapon that we see from the Time Wars, right? Like from the things that they talked all about in the last two seasons of Star Trek Enterprise. And it's just so cool to actually see a weapon, a time-based weapon being used. I just thought that was super cool. I had no concept of what a time war could look like, aside from like Doctor Who, you know, before now. And now I've actually seen a weapon that uses time as its attack method, and it's freaking cool. And I just thought that was so cool. So anyway, I'm going to pass this baton to whoever wants to take next. But score. Yeah.
You got to give your score.
I got a score. So this absolutely gets my best score for the season. I don't think this is a 10 episode, but this is a solid 9 episode. The writing was great. The acting was great. The character interactions were great. The time stuff was really cool. Even the pacing and the all that kind of stuff was really good. I just really enjoyed it. So a 9 from me.
A 9. Okay, we got a 9 from Eric. How about you, Shannon? What did you think?
Well, actually, I was thinking about this because I rewatched the last season before, you know, a couple weeks ago. And I think that this one and the last episode, the prior season, both are 9.5 because they moved me in different ways. But it's just like, it was like, you're so into the show. It's like, this is awesome. I want to watch it again. And I did.
That's good. That's very good. So you're going to go with a 9.5.
Yes.
All right, so we got a 9.5 from Shannon. How about you, David?
Yeah, this particular episode I actually enjoyed a lot more than the previous episode of the season, and actually I agree with Eric that this episode definitely got my attention. I definitely enjoyed the whole story plot of it, and the fact that it was just jumping back and forth, and mentions of different episodes, the different series, such as like the Temple Cold War. I actually thought that was really nice, and the fact that the idea of the way that they use this bug to slow people down, I thought that was a really interesting plot. So I actually really enjoyed this episode. So it's not technically a 10, but it's definitely going to get one of my best Discovery series scores out there, which I'm going to actually give it about an 8. I'm just going to go with an 8. That one.
All right. How about you, Charles?
Okay. A few things to bring up. You talked about Jen Reno's interaction. What about Reno's interaction with Rayner? I thought was a real fun interaction with those two going. We got to see a little bit of her, and I think he got a little bit dosed of what she's like. And then I'm not positive about this, but we saw Rayner and Michael in their red uniforms. Damn it. I think he was in a blue uniform at one point.
He was.
But I also saw him a lot in his Discovery uniform from season 1 and 2.
Was a little confusing, Charles.
He was in the pinstripes.
Like,
so
how?
He's
supposed to be outside of time, but his uniform changes every time they jump.
But I'm thinking somehow he's keeping the uniform of where he's at while they're not. So it's interesting. I guess that with the spore jump, he can actually jump and stay in the proper time zone, time frame. I also thought this was an episode that I think we got bits and pieces of Rainer starting to understand how Michael commands on her ship and getting a little more change of why I think we want to like him more, because he's starting to understand and respect Michael and the crew. His interactions with the crew were very good. And now I can't think of the character's name. We got to talk about the one who was playing Captain in the final scene.
Oh, crap.
Our android.
Oh, Arium?
Not our android. Arium.
Arium.
We got to talk about Arium in there. That was interesting to see Arium. Arium as a character, I'm not sure who portrayed her, but Arium back. And the interaction she was having with Michael and the crew.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
she was...
Yeah, go ahead.
Go.
Well,
go
I was
ahead.
Just going to say, so I'm glad that you mentioned Arium, because in this episode, there was a thing where, like, Michael knows that Arium is going to have this special thing that helps her convince people that she actually is traveling through time, right? And she somehow convinces Arium that they actually know each other, because Arium would sacrifice her life to save the ship, and then someone on the bridge is like, no, she wouldn't.
Yeah.
And that's like literally the first thing any Starfleet and like officer would do, right? Is sacrifice their, like, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, right?
Just like, exactly.
So I just thought, like, the way that they used Arium, I mean, it was cool to have her back, and it was portrayed by the woman who played her in season two there, not Anna Cheese. Was it Anna Cheese?
Sarah Mitchell.
It wasn't Sarah Michi.
It sounds like the second one. Definitely.
It's the season two, yeah, person. So it was the same person. But just, like, the way that they used Arium and kind of, like, the cheesiness of that moment was one of the reasons that it knocked it down just a little bit for me. So
aww.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah,
and
I
it's
thought
too
that
bad because
Arium's
such a cool character, right? And you wondered, like, I thought they used her really coolly, like, in particular season two, right? Season two Arium is awesome. But, yeah, anyway.
But I thought the interaction was good. I think it was fun to see Arium back, especially to see the fact when they went down the crew list who's on the bridge, and you realize Arium's on there. It's like, oh, yeah, Arium, which we haven't dealt with in several seasons. So I think it was nice to not only sit there and say, okay, we're going to go through these time periods, but we're going to put people back in those positions to put the ship, the bridge crew back in wearing their Discovery Season 2 uniform and putting them back to where they were. And I think that was one of the fun parts to getting that going in, saying, okay, we are going to go back in time and actually recreate the scene. So I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to agree with the fans on this one. I'm going to go with a
9.2. 9.2. All right. Well, I'll jump in here real quickly because I just want to say I thought this episode was phenomenal, unlike the best episode of Star Trek ever filmed, and that was TNG Season 2 episode Shades of Grey, which is the best episode of Star Trek I have ever seen. But this one beats that one. And what I liked about this episode is, unlike Shades of Grey, we actually got to go back in time and see alternate takes of moments that we have already seen. And that's what I really liked. Like Paul had mentioned, was it Paul or Charles? We get to see the first interaction between Jet Reno and Rainer. And, you know, that's a moment that, you know, we never would have seen, but we got to see it. We got to see Discovery being built. We got to see, you know, this whole Arium thing that you're talking about. They went back to familiar points in Star Trek that we're all familiar with, but gave us a different take on the same situation. And that is what I really liked about this episode. It wasn't just a rehash. It wasn't the same old Groundhog Day thing. They took it in a different direction. And that was something that I really, really liked about this episode. So, yeah, I'm gonna go along with the fans on this one, and I'm going to give it a 9.2. And we also have with us on the line, we have our good friend Ryan, who's with us as well. Ryan, what did you think about the episode? What score would you give it? You still there? Hello? Okay. We lost Ryan. Well, all right, so that means...
Well, he said nine on a Facebook message, just so you know.
Okay, so he gave us a 9 on the Facebook. Yes. And that means Paul gets to bring up the caboose.
Oh, is it me?
That's you.
If you're sure, I mean, I certainly don't have to, but I talked a lot earlier. But I would just say, I think of this season, this is the strongest episode, I would say. And, you know, we talked a little bit about a lot of it for me is the strength of particular cast members, right? I think that Anthony Rapp really brought it, really, really strong performance. I think, you know, kind of what is helping me out a lot this season is Callum Keith Rennie as Rainer. I just think he's great. He's compelling. He's believable. He's brings some conflict to it. He's just not, you know, he's not content to be harmonious, right? And he's rough. He's got rough edges, you know. He's hard grained sandpaper. So I really like what he's doing, and I feel we're seeing his character actually have an arc, you know, where he's like working it to have some growth happen and some changes. And I think it's really good. So a lot of what carried me for this episode was the technical aspects. We had a much, 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 much better script than we typically have been getting from Discovery. It was very tightly directed. They weren't relying on a lot of handheld stuff like they sometimes do with the cinematography.
Oh,
it was a lot cleaner. They did a lot of that. The one we're going to talk about next, way too much.
Motion sick.
Yeah, but it's just, this was crisp. It was just really, I mean, there's so much back and forth, right? You need somebody who can cut really well. You need good editing to convince everybody, and so it's not confusing. I thought this was extremely well edited, and it helped the pacing really create a good sense of suspense that was enabled by the sense of you know, investment from the characters in trying to figure this out. So to me, it was, I think, really, really, really strong. Liked it quite a bit. You know, this is, you know, I think, you know, I save my 9s and 10s for, you know, episodes that I feel like have like classic status, like City on the Edge of Forever, Doomsday Machine, Best of Both Worlds. Those are 9s and 10s. But I would happily give this one an 8. You know, because I think, I don't know that this is one of the greatest episodes in the franchise ever, but it certainly was an 8 compared to some of the stuff we've seen before. So a really super strong episode. For me, best of the season so far.
All right. So that wraps up our discussion on Face the Strange. And Charles, so how close did we come? The fans gave it a 9.2. How about the Trekspurts? Were we close?
Oh, once again, we're below the fans. Whereas they gave it a 9.2, we're giving it an 8.8.
8.8, still respectable. Still respectable. All right, guys, well, now we're going to be talking about the episode Mirrors, which was the episode that was on last week, and we're going to do some cadet training before we jump into this. And that is your cue, Charles.
All right. Not as much in this episode, but there's still a few good ones in here. Let's go back, of course, to the original series, Mirror, Mirror, Season 2, Episode 4, and the origins of the ISS Enterprise. Discovery, Terra Firma, Parts 1 and 2, Season 3, Episode 9 and 10. There was mention of a Kelpian who changed history. Of course, we know that would have been Saru. DS9, Indiscretion, Season 4, Episode 5, is the first time we actually physically see the Breen. The Breen were mentioned in Next Generation, but it was DS9 we first got to see them. Discovery, The Wolf Inside, Season 1, Episode 11, Saints of Imperfection, Season 2, Episode 5. And this one's for Jim, Eric, and I. Star Trek Discovery, Dead and List, the novel. Dr. Culver's Death and Return. We had a lot of fun talking about that book. That was an interesting time on that one. And when you're dealing with the Mirror Universe, let's, of course, deal with DS9, Enterprise, Discovery. And if you want to, go back to several different series of IDW Comics as they spent time in the Mirror Universe. So I'll pass this over to Jim to pass it to Eric.
Yeah, so every week I ask the Facebook fans to score the episode on a scale of 1 to 10. And we did that for Mirrors as well. And Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say about Mirrors?
Well, Jeremy Jackson gave it a solid 6, which is saying something for this show. Eddie Caslow said an 8. Juan Aguilar said a 9. Jeff Shrout gave it a 7. Kevin Jellick said 9. John X, which is just a cool name, gave it a 10. Thomas Janik said, totally loved it, 10. Starfleet Command, who is a top contributor, said same way the Nelsing ratings, rated it 100%, and lots of hearts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hearts, and 6 100%. That, I think Starfleet Command feels strongly about that. Mama Bear BL gave it a 10, and Roger Hernandez also gave it a 10, and that, you guys, ties our fan score from the previous episode of 9.2.
Has that ever happened before?
Well,
I know of.
It's possible it's happened before, but it's never happened on the same show because we rarely, review two episodes on the same show.
True. Right. Absolutely true. All right, so Paul, you want to jump in and start us off with this one? Since you pulled up the caboose on the last one, it's only fair that you start off as the engineer on this one.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm going to be brief just because a lot of times, I'd rather save my talking for when I'm enthusiastic about something, and I sometimes end up having to be the contrarian when a lot of people like something. I hated this episode. It was awful. It was just painful for me to watch. I hold a show's quality up to what I've previously seen, okay? And if you compare this episode to the one that we just talked about, this one is just tepid in the extreme. It was extremely badly written. There was absolutely no, legit reason to incorporate the ISS Enterprise whatsoever. I mean, I'm sure somebody's going to try to explain to me some, reason that they think that it needed to be there, but I just think it's, I call horse hockey. It was just somebody had this idea. They thought it would be cool, and so they just no, not at all. Absolutely no reason for that at all. I found it's getting really repetitive to me this season with this whole treasure hunt thing and having characters refer to each thing they're looking for, each artifact of the week being a clue, like they're playing a board game. It's just preposterous to hear them keep referencing a clue, and we're going to go to the next clue. It's adolescent sounding, man. It just sounds terrible. It really makes it hard to have much suspension of disbelief to believe in what's going on, because it's not like somebody's, I'm going to plant these clues here for the Federation to, and no, it's, that's not what's going on at all. I mean, they're artifacts or whatever, but just this whole, Hardy Boys mentality is just really difficult. I don't want to pick on anybody, so I'm not going to, but there are some really unfortunate performances in this particular episode. Really unfortunate. One in particular, I will just say this is an individual who got an enormous amount of close-ups this particular episode, like a lot. Close-ups that were revealing to, like if I was going to teach a class on how not to structure flashbacks, this would be what I would use as an example. These are some of the most unnecessary and ham-fisted flashbacks I've ever seen. They were just appalling. I have no investment in the Breen whatsoever, and I think that it's not anything that really seems necessary to this story. Whatever.
Whoa.
Yeah, just me, man. I could not care less. Sorry, dude. Not care less. They have two faces, and one of them looks like a lollipop that's been sucked through a lint dryer. I mean, I'm just like, it's like, who cares? And if that's really who La'ak is, fine, dude. Go ahead. Whatever. Go knock yourself out. But I'm just like, I feel like if I hear Cleveland Booker say "Lock and Mole" one more time, I'm going to, like, you know, jump out a window. I mean, it's just becoming, you know, it's all, it's 90% of his dialogue is "Mole and Lock, Mole and Lock." It's just so repetitive and annoying. So yeah, this is like how not to do a Star Trek episode for me. I don't know how, what everyone's drinking that is giving this episode tens. I wish I had a bottle of it. I would be joining you. But, you know, for me, who likes, you know, kind of more old-fashioned classic storytelling and, you know, performances where it seemed like somebody actually had an acting class in their CV, I couldn't stand it. It was painful for me. I was waiting, looking at my wife going, are we done? Is it over yet? No, it's still grinding on. We're still grinding our way through this, through one bet. And every single episode of Discovery lately has felt compelled. There must be a gunfight. There must be a shootout. Pew, 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 pew.
They do feel a little formulaic in that regard.
Diving over the furniture. I mean, at one point, they literally, I'm like, they're going to go flying through a big plate glass wall now, aren't they? And yes, they did. And oh, the stuntmen are going through the shattering glass wall now. And oh, somebody accidentally fell on their sharp instrument that they were holding out previously. That's a surprise. That they were holding out, you know, dangerously. What a shock that they actually fell on it and impaled themselves. I hope they'll be okay. Gee whiz. It's just every cliche in the book, just terrible writing and a lot of bad acting. So for me, I'm being generous. I'm giving it a 4. This was just appalling.
Appalling. A 4 from Paul because it's appalling. How about you, David?
Well, I hate to be the grumpy old one again with Paul here, but I actually have to agree with Paul. I think he pinpointed every aspect of it. I mean, the fact that this episode was, yes, we finally got to reveal what they look like, what we've all been waiting for since Deep Space Nine, but the idea that they look like jelly beans, or in this case, jellied beans. I don't know. It's just something about them that just seems...
Oh, et tu, sir. Well done. Well done. Jelly beans.
So,
I think you have a future in licensing and marketing, David.
I was going to say, you heard it here first, people.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Copyright that shit right now.
To me, I don't know. I was excited to see them like that, and it was interesting, and it kind of makes sense why the Dominion kind of, like, you know, went along with them, because I guess they were somewhat fluid, like
the
others.
Well, we should talk about that. So, what do you think? Is there a connection that now that we've seen a Breen's face, evolved Breen's face, I guess, the one that is see-through, it appears to have transparent abilities. Do you think it also has, like, form-changing abilities?
I don't know. It just the thing that I didn't understand was the fact that they were liquid, and all of a sudden, once their helmet was off, it was like, I guess the helmet keeps them moist, but once the helmet comes off, it's like their skin gets all hard and rocky, and it's like, wait. So I didn't understand why they couldn't keep their shape. So
there's a real sunblock crisis on Breen, right? It's very hard to find. It's expensive to manufacture. You know, all the Breen celebrities get a hold of it. And
I always thought that the Breen homeworld was supposed to be cold.
I don't know. All I know, is,
I know is that moist is a really unfortunate turn of phrase. And
So David, you're not wrong. Like, the colloquial thinking has been, or the conventional thinking has been, that the reason that they wore those uniforms was that their homeworld was cold and that they couldn't stand being in other people's environments, and so that's why they wore those. But remember, in Deep Space Nine, at one point, Wayun says something about how comfortable their home planet is actually this time of year. And so I think there's always been a question, even from the DS9 days, of why they actually wear the things. And we've never seen, like, cold stuff come out of it on Deep Space Nine or anything. It was just something that was kind of conjectured, and then it was actually expanded upon in some beta canon, like a couple of the novels that included the Breen talked about their cold planet and that kind of stuff. But we can't, you know, we can't use that as sort of what the real story is. So I didn't mind that they pivoted a little bit and didn't, and went away from the cold thing. I mean, maybe the cold thing still exists, but like the suit thing certainly seems to be a way that they can maintain their transparent state, right?
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, the suits actually bothered me. I know it's supposed to be futuristic, you know, in the 32nd century and everything, but whatever happened to the long beak part of the helmet? What happened to that? I mean, shouldn't that have been, like, the form of their face, maybe? Or maybe, I don't know. It was just a little strange that going from a duck-like helmet to all of a sudden a flat face, that was just, like, it didn't make sense to me. So to me, I was just like, no.
It's like changing the Klingons. It's just wrong.
well, you know, David, I want to interject here because you just touched on something that bugged the living shit out of me to a point where I couldn't even look at it without laughing, because I'm an electrician by trade. And okay. I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not, but going up the right and the left side of the Breen's face was a piece of MC cable spray painted black with a 90-degree connector going into the helmet. And every single time I looked at him, I just could not stop but laughing, because I put thousands and thousands of those in at work every freaking day. And to see that exact same thing on Star Trek just pulled me right out of everything and just made me laugh out loud. I'm like, they couldn't come up with something that looked better than a piece of electrical cable spray painted black? For God's sake, they have a $6 million budget. God almighty. So, yeah, I had to throw that. I had to throw that in there.
Yeah,
my giant super pet peeve of the episode was that. Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it just, I'm kind of a canonical kind of guy, so it's just, if it works, why change it? You know, so I don't know. So anywho, to me, this episode was kind of to me as well. So I'm kind of around there with Paul, and I'm going to probably give this, I was going to give this a little bit lower than 4, just because of the fact that it was a weird episode and everything. But since they revealed, I guess, what the Breens look like, I'm actually going to be giving this a little bit more because I was hyped for it, but it's going to be about a 5.
Five. Okay, so let's see what else we can go. Shannon, you want to jump in next?
Sure. Well, okay, if I hadn't watched them back to back, okay, I probably would have given it a 4. Sorry, because I did watch them back to back, I'd give them a 4, but otherwise it would be a 6, because it's just not a good episode. But the episode in front of it was so good, you know. So I don't know if you want to go with what it would be by itself or what it was when you watched in order. So maybe a 5, since it's a 4 or 6, depending on if you watch it by itself. Because I just didn't like it. Yeah.
All right. Well, a 5. A 5 is fair. We can take a 5. That's cool. That's mm-hmm. cool. And how about you, Charles? You want to jump in here?
Okay. Trying to hit a little more of the positive on this one. Okay. One of the things, and I'm sure this has been discussed, thought about us before. Michael says she is going to leave to go on a dangerous mission, and Rayner challenges Rayner challenges her decision.
Yeah,
and I think that was a good choice on him by saying, This is a dangerous mission. Why is the captain going?
Like
Charles,
Kirk never
the first
did.
Time, no, it's the first. Charles
Kirk
is totally
never,
right. It's the first time we actually see Rayner acting like a responsible XO.
Yeah.
Yeah, he must have saw a bunch of Hollows of Riker or something. I don't know.
But we've always been used to, well, in TOS, the captain usually always went down. In TNG, they changed the rules where they didn't want the captain going down unless it was safe. Then we've had variation since then. But I think I like it where the XO actually does challenge the captain. Is this a right choice for you to be going down, risking yourself? I know Michael's got her own reasons for doing it. But I'd rather, but, I know people were not quite crazy about Tilly and her going through working on conduits. But I think her main goal wasn't that she was going to change the conduit. She was there to spark a conversation with Culber and remind us that Culber is trying to be the stone that helps deal with everybody's emotional issues. And forgetting that, well, yes, he's still carrying a little bit of baggage himself, especially on the death that he went through in season one and the return he did in season two, which is why I brought up those two episodes and the book. Because, okay, he's gone, then he's back, and there's that big gap. And that's the reason why we rather enjoyed the novel that we read, because even though it's not pure canon, we call that canon adjacent. And it kind of well fills in what happened in there and kind of some issues he had while he was gone, which I thought was a good touch in there. Okay, yes, we're doing a little tidbit back into the Mirror Universe. But I thought it interesting that we got a issue of, okay, there was change in the Mirror Universe at one point. And I think I saw at least one YouTube that kind of discussed some of the path that occurred in time. And we do
you mean, so Charles, what you're talking about as a result of the original Mirror Mirror episode, right?
Yes. Because
like the reforms
from,
that Spock
we go
made.
From, we went from the Mirror Universe
yeah.
to Giorgio, and we learned from Giorgio that we do have a Kelpian who helped change the time frame. And I believe, depending on where you read, that Spock did some changing in the time frame also. So that we've seen a little bit of progression, that there had been some changes before we eventually jumped to DS9 and things have gone awry again. But I like a little bit of that history. I didn't mind the brain scene because, okay, it was a little odd, but we got a little bit of backstory on the Breen, which we've not had before. And I do like getting a little bit of these scenes getting tied in there. Otherwise, like, okay, we've got these two people, but we have no clue why they're out there. Well, we got a little more reason why they're out there. So I'm going to give this one actually about an 8.5. I actually still enjoyed this episode and like what they're doing with it.
Well, I already told you guys what I thought about the Breen costume. I laugh out loud every time I see it. Besides that, though, like Charles said, I thought it was a nice touch that we find out what Spock did with the Enterprise and the Tantalus device. he did make changes, but he was assassinated. And then the Kelpian came along and they used the Enterprise to rescue people. And that's why there was children on the ship and whatnot. And somehow they ended up in that temporal brouhaha, wherever they were. And those people actually made it through and were living in the Federation. And I thought that was a cool twist. Was it necessary? I don't think so. I think that they kind of took a page from Picard season 3 and said, let's throw some nostalgia in there. Boom. Because when they pulled the Enterprise out, Stamets says, it's the ISS Enterprise. How would they know this? Like, he said this before they even saw the ship. And I thought that was a little bit, you know, it's like, okay, it's the ISS Enterprise.
I think he might have actually seen it because of all of his travel through mycelial network.
Possible. That is completely possible. So the Enterprise gets stuck in a temporal rift and their shuttle flies away because Maul does some backfeed through the security devices to short out the shield. Cool. And they lose their shuttle. And it's made perfectly clear to the audience there's no way off the ship now. All the shuttles are gone. All the life pods are gone. Yet when Locke gets impaled with a piece of glass that happens to be in his hand, whatever, and they leave them in sick bay, they find some shuttle to get off the ship that no one knew existed. And I'm like, well, that's mighty convenient, huh? And they just warp away. And I'm like, that's a convenient trope, huh? And I was kind of like, that's weird. But I'll let that slide for the story. And of course, Rayner, who has been insane after these two, is like, oh yeah, they jumped away with a warp bubble, but we can trace them later. And this is the guy that blew up a mountain and crashed his ship into the desert to stop them. And now he's like, oh yeah, well, they warped away. We'll follow the warp trail later. I'm like, okay, this cool, whatever. And the fact that they turn around, and I mentioned this briefly a couple episodes ago, I remember. They turn around and they send Awushakun and Detmer away on the Enterprise to bring it back to Starfleet. So what, now they're gone for the rest of the season? Now we're not going to see them because they're gone. I mean, what is the deal with taking characters away? I don't think that was necessary at all.
Jim, I'm wondering if there might have been an issue that some of them may not have been able to be there for many of the recording scenes. They've got other things they're doing.
It's possible.
So those people
may not be
able to get to filming, and that's why they're kind of pulling them out, because they haven't been there for the scenes.
That's totally possible.
Well, they found out the show's getting canceled, and they got a better gig.
And you know, speaking of Tilly, I noticed something in this episode that I've never seen on Star Trek before. Maybe someone can correct me if I am wrong, but when Tilly goes into sick bay, Culber says, what are you doing here? And she says, I'm helping Paul with these conduits. And that line struck me as so strange, because they never refer to themselves by the first name. It's always Burnham. Well, Sru only has one name. But you never hear when
Dude,
they're on
Strange New Worlds. They do constantly.
Yeah, and at that moment, Tilly is actually talking to Culber. So
yeah, I mean, they refer to
like
each other
specifically,
I mean,
referring to his partner. So
they refer to the helmsman on Strange New Worlds by her first name all the time.
Yeah, but we're talking Discovery here.
In this particular moment, it's because she's literally talking to Paul's husband. So there's just like a familiarity. Why, if you were talking to somebody about your wife, you wouldn't call her like Mrs. Yeager, right?
Well, I never call her that. I have other acronyms that I use, but not that. But I just found that strange, because I don't ever remember that.
No, that was mine.
I thought that was weird at that particular moment. But there was a lot in this episode that was – and the Breen, I don't care. I got to be honest with you. I think the whole Maul Locke backstory was like just a bunch of filler. I don't care. really, about the whole situation. And the fact that they're green jelly bean liquid things that they have to be in the suit, I just don't care. So, yeah, so overall, I hate to say this. I hate to be with David and Paul on this one. But, yeah, I got to be with Paul and David on this one. I got to go with a 5 on this one. I'm sorry, guys, but I got to be
generous.
I just had to go with the 5. And that wraps up the caboose, and that leaves you, Eric. And then we do have some callers on the line here, though, that we're going to get to after Eric does his thing.
Okay. Well, I'll try and go quickly so that the callers have time to give us their opinions. What will I say about this episode? Like, in some ways, I can't disagree with you guys. Like, there are definitely some limitations to this episode that that make it less enjoyable than it could be. I will say that any time that they kind of give us a big reveal on Star Trek or they open up some lore that we haven't explored before, I think that there's always kind of a mixed reaction, right? And I feel like we need a little bit of distance from it to actually evaluate whether we like it or not. So for me, the initial take on the whole reveal of what the Breen actually look like, my first reaction was, oh my God, somehow the Breen are related to the Founders, right? Because they have this like clear jelly-like skin. Maybe they can change shape, maybe they can't. But they certainly think that being translucent is more of an evolved form than being solid, which is exactly the same type of attitude that that the Founders took. So I just thought that was kind of cool, like, because honestly, Deep Space Nine is probably my favorite overall Star Trek, and I love the introduction of the Founders, and I love the Dominion War, and I think that they actually handled it really well. And the fact that the Breen in, you know, DS9 kind of came in as a race that we didn't really know anything about them. They were a big mystery. And now we know a little bit more. Now, listen, I can't disagree with things like David saying, you know, their helmets used to be duck-billed, but now they aren't. Yeah, no, totally, right? Like, what happened there? you know, there's some, like, mechanics of the thing here that I am not entirely comfortable with, but we do get a little bit of extra lore, which I think is pretty cool. So that's my take on the Breen. The ISS Enterprise, okay. I kind of am with you guys. I don't know that that was an essential part of the story at all. I kind of felt like they wrote that into the story because they had the Strange New World set sitting around and they felt like they wanted to use it in some way. And then, like, furthermore, I didn't actually think their decoration of the set was that great. It didn't feel ISS-y enough to me. It kind of felt like the regular Enterprise set with like a few stickers on the walls and that kind of stuff. I don't know. I wanted more ISS-iness, and it didn't feel evil to me.
Eric, about that, have you noticed that there was no symbol of the sword in the world?
There actually was. There was one on a transporter door. I remember because I watched it. Or at least I'm pretty sure there was. One on a transporter door. But it looked a little bit different. Yeah. But, okay, so here's what I'll say, though. We all loved the J.K. Woodward illustrated mirror comics that IDW put out. Like, they were so good. And they explored the, like, post TOS mirror universe a little bit with Mirror Spock and what it was like for him to be chancellor and to kind of try and push these new reforms in the mirror universe. So that to me was kind of like a nice little filler to say, oh yeah, and also Mirror Action Saru was really important because we had seen him, you know, a couple seasons ago, and you know, it's cool to like plug him into that lore. So but that's all to say, like, all the fun things that I'm talking about are exactly what Paul talked about. It is lazy writing. It is going back to old episodes and saying, oh, that's a fun thing, let's put that in. Oh, that's a fun thing, let's put that in. And when you end up with an episode at the end of the day, you're kind of left with, like, wait, what just happened? Why was the ISS Enterprise there? Why do I care? I mean, it was fun that Saru's part of it or whatever, and it kind of made me giggle, but does it really actually matter? Not to get too negative, let's talk about good stuff from this episode. I think two episodes in a row now, one, I've missed Saru, right? We've had zero Saru or Tarina for two episodes, so what the hell? I guess they were busy or something. But luckily we've had... Yeah. No. But luckily we've had David Ajala. And I feel like David Ajala has really actually been the highlight of the past couple of episodes for me. The concept in this one of him kind of like trying to connect to this other person, I forget their names, Maul and Locke, it's one of the two, like trying to connect to her and like having this connection through his mentor and that kind of stuff. I appreciated that. And I appreciated the fact that he's not just writing her off, you know, he's trying to be like, no, you know what? I remember when I was in a similar position and somebody gave me a chance and I pulled my way out of it. I'm going to try and do the same thing. So I guess if there's one thing that I did appreciate about this episode, it's David Ajala's character and the way that they wrote his longing for a better relationship with this person that he kind of considers family, I think, at the end of the day. We also started this episode with a book log, which is pretty odd. Like, usually it's a captain's log of a Starfleet captain, so we get Book's personal log at the start of this. I think that's kind of cool. And then I guess the last thing that I want to say before we get to some other things are that many, many, many people have shipped Owushukun and Detmer since the very beginning of Star Trek Discovery. And finally we get the both of them taking off alone in the ISS Enterprise. You know, do they even have warp drive? I have no idea. Maybe they're going to impulse their way all the way.
I bet they have a holodeck, if you know what I'm saying.
But I'm just saying that, like, to me, you guys, like, the fact that these two are finally alone on a starship together, this is going to lead to so much fan fiction, and it makes me so excited about it. You know, I have no idea where it's going. So that's to say, like, on one respect, I'm like super excited about it, and it makes me sort of almost giddy to think about it. And then I'm also on Jim's side of like, wait, does this mean we get no Owu and Detmer for the rest of the season? I'm not going to write them off. I'm hoping that they're coming back, but I'm hoping that they have a little adventure in there and that some fanfic is going to come up with all sorts of things that happen in that interim. So
can I ask you a quick question, man?
Yeah.
So is this just another situation where a starship, because they're flying the ISS Enterprise, right?
Yeah.
So is this another situation where you have a starship that was originally built to be operated by a crew of 400 that's just being operated by two people? Is that what we have here?
I think that's what we have
here. Well, the two of them are flying. So somehow those 398 other occupations that were necessary to keep the ship from exploding are redundant when you have two gal pals gallivanting on a slow boat to China together. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, because Burnham specifically said that she asked Detmer and Owo to put together a team.
They have a team.
Okay, excellent. Okay. Thank goodness, because I was just like,
I was about to say, because they put together a team, where did they get that team from? I mean,
well,
the
from
Discovery,
the Discovery,
so, is a little bit smaller,
there is,
I thought,
precedent,
right?
For this, you guys, because back in the TNG days, they actually were able to crew a galaxy-class starship with, like, on the order of 15 to 20 people. There's enough automation involved that if you're not, like, going into battle or nothing, like, really funky happens, I think about 20 people can run a pretty decent-sized starship.
Well, actually,
yeah, all you need is the M5 computer, right? You just plug in the M5.
Well, then you only don't need anybody.
Well, actually,
you're
right,
anybody.
Eric,
good.
Eric, you're right, because actually in Picard Season 3, they just had the original crew, and they went to battle with the Borg, and somehow they maneuvered the Galaxy class into the Borg space station, and somehow that worked.
There were like 7 people, right?
Yeah.
They can do it.
It's an established thing. Come on.
That's a lot of like...
You also got the extra comps.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all a lot of stuff.
And trouble.
I feel like there's some like fun things in this episode. I did not hate this episode. Like, I was kind of surprised that people were rating it fours and stuff, because I feel like we have seen worse episodes of Discovery in the past. But that is to say that this was not a good episode. So what am I going to rate it? I feel like I would rate it like in that four and five range, but I really dug the book stuff. I did. I think David Ajala was great. And if Saru had been on, I probably would have gone another point. So let's go with a six. Solid
six.
So
if it had been an entirely different episode, you would have given it a six.
No. That's not what I said. Just more of what I needed. And you know what? I think that anytime we get our bubbles burst with a big reveal like this, like, what do the Breen look like? Oh, my God. We went through X number of seasons of DS9. It's been X number of years since we saw them. Like, what's the big reveal going to be? And all of a sudden, we see it. I do think that our natural reaction is going to be like, well, that's lame. And then I think in, like, 5 years, we'll be like, actually, that was kind of cool. And maybe Discovery's tendency to kind of like go back and rewrite things so that they specifically fit with Star Trek history is a thing that's going to be carried forward in Strange New Worlds and future shows, right? I think that if Star Trek is seeking to do anything right now, it's not only continue that kind of Star Trek legacy, but it's also to make sure that they go back and have these touchstones to familiar context that bring the fans into it. So yeah. That's why everybody's into like Star Trek legacy and things like this, right? Fans want to see more of what they've already seen. And if Star Trek kind of like just tells new stories, but keeps going back and touching in on little things, I think it will overall be successful.
And actually, Eric, I think you're right on that, because later on in years, just because it's canceled, it doesn't mean it can be canceled forever. They could bring it back. So
it's true.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add to that before we get to our callers who are patiently waiting and listening to us babbling, and I appreciate that. I just want to say, I see a future, and let's see if you guys see it or agree with me, but it seems to me like we're setting up the complete demise of Discovery. It seems like, in my opinion, Book's going to take off with Burnham. Rayner's going to be the new captain. We're going to have this new crew of unknown Discovery people on the ship. Saru will be gone. Tilly will be gone. Culber's going to take off with Stamets, and we're not the crew that we know on the Discovery will all disperse to different places.
Oh my God, everything's falling apart.
And Rayner's going to take over the Discovery with a new crew. That's the way I
know. Hey man, it's senior year in high school. Everyone's got to go get a freaking job or mow the lawn.
There's exactly. No way they are going to leave the Discovery's legacy with a captain who has had 30 years in the burn. That is false, and there's no way they're going to do it.
I'm making
no
a prediction right now.
I am
and
making
right
the
now,
opposite prediction.
And we will find out. We will find out in 4 episodes who is right. But that is what I see. Yep. You know, I see them setting that up.
That would be dirty. That would be dirty and bad if they did that.
I
because
see
like, to have
I think
the legacy of Michael Burnham be this like Rayner character, this reformed Rayner character. No way. No way they're going to do that.
I think you're going to see a mass example of self-sacrifice where at least
yes,
3 or 4
I've
characters are going to
the
off themselves
yes.
for the greater good, right?
Yes.
I think that's what you're going to see. Is this like, yes. you know, basically, I think Jim's right.
Rayner's
going to
die.
And you're right. You know, Jim's right in that, I think they don't want to basically have a means to have this come back from the dead, you know, and at some point they want to terminate it. So they're just going to have a couple of people selflessly sacrifice themselves. Isn't that right, Leia?
Wow.
All right.
So who's our first caller?
Callers and birthdays? I don't know. We're going to have to cut one segment.
Leia has found me. So let's get to some callers. Let me answer the phone here. They've been waiting a long time. Let's see if my gremlins will. There we go. Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Hey, hello? Guys, it's Ryan.
Ryan, what's up, buddy?
Not much. Just figured I'd, get my 2 cents in.
Yeah, what
all
do you
right,
think about
so
you,
Ryan? What you think? What do you think?
I'm with you guys. I give it a 6.
A 6?
I mean, it was good. It was, you know, nice backstory and stuff, but, you know, I think we should just delve more into just those two versus having, you know, the love story and just, you know, but.
Ryan, what do you think about last week's episode? Do you remember that one? The Face the Strange episode?
I like that one. I think, yeah, like I say that one, I think was really good, really well done. I mean, the fact that, yeah, we jump around different spots of discovery and I'm like, okay, I know that music. Okay, that's good. Interesting. And then progress to other versions, which, yeah, I mean, it's like kind of interesting. Like, okay, they have a time bug. Cool. What else do they have?
I know. Like, doesn't it make you wonder, like, what else was, like, a weapon in the temporal wars?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm kind of more of like Year of Hell. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. But I'm like, oh, that's right. Enterprise had a big thing, too.
Yeah, I mean, how do you use time as a weapon? That was, to me, that was one of the coolest things about the Face of Strange was like, how do you use time as a weapon? Oh, you can just use this little thing and like use it to delay people. And that is super annoying.
Yeah. And their personal transport is happening. So, okay, we'll be right there.
Okay.
Oh, that's it.
Let's talk about how much energy it would take to walk the 20 feet to the ready room and the fact that they have to transport there.
Yeah, I thought that was a little strange. I was like, what?
That reminded me of the scene in Spaceballs when Screw beamed down and he says, forget it, I'll walk. And he just walks through the door. You know?
Yeah.
Same thing. But, all right, well, that's cool. And we have another caller on the line here as well. So let me see if my gremlins will work and my, because sometimes it gets, there we go. Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight? Hello? Caller? Hello, caller. Okay. All right. So we don't have another caller, or maybe we do, and I'm not sure, but we're going to move on. All right. So, Charles, what's the overall score for Mirrors? I know we're going to be much lower than the fans on this one.
Well, I was saying we might want to skip this one. with the fans giving this a 9.2 and the Trekspert's giving it a 5.6.
Ooh, ouch.
Wow, that's a whoa.
Yeah,
wow, we're up on them.
Fans enjoyed it. The host, most of the hosts didn't.
Wow.
Wow. And, you know, I watched this episode 3 times trying to like it more. And just
3 times? Judas Priest.
Yeah. I was like, well,
dude, you're never going to get those hours of your life back. You know that, right?
But, dude, I love Star Trek V.
Yeah, that's true. He's a glutton for punishment.
I guess so. Wow. Holy crap.
I'm like, this episode can't be as bad as I think it is. It's got to be better. I love that
Jim's applying Star Trek 5
logic. It must have
been
the Vermont water.
It can't possibly be that bad.
Yeah, what happens? Okay, here's a question, right?
Honor. Okay.
What happens if...
that is true. Jim.
What happens if this week's episode is worse?
No.
Oh, my God, I'll have to watch it.
No way.
I'm just going by the scores on the IMDb.
Oh, my God.
Well, we have about 15 minutes left, so I think we have some time to squeeze in some birthdays. We're going to
That was not a Klingon song.
Guys, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric. But Eric has a bonus birthday.
I do have a bonus
birthday.
Take
it away, Eric.
Not a remembrance. I'm very excited about that. We have 4 remembrances this week. We have first this week, David Birney, who, of course, played the Romulan Senator Letent and the Letent alien in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine 6th season episode Tears of the Prophets. David Byrne was, of course, well known for several other things in his life, but he actually crossed over into Star Wars. In that franchise, he portrayed the voice of Anakin Skywalker in NPR's radio drama adaptation of Return of the Jedi. Happy birthday, David Byrne. Happy birthday as well to Jill Dorothy Ireland. She's the English actress who played Layla Colomi in the TOS first season's episode, This Side of Paradise. She had a couple of really cool autobiographical novels. You should check them out. One was called Life Wish, written in 1987, and one was called Life Lines, written in 1989. Jill Dorothy Ireland would have had a birthday this week. Unfortunately, we lost her at the young age of 54 years old, way back in 1990. Happy birthday, Jill. Happy birthday as well to Vic Perrin. Victor H. Vic Perrin was an actor who played Tharn in the TOS second season episode Mirror Mirror, which we were just talking about. He's from Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, up around the way, around where I'm from. And he's been in a ton of things, too. You might recognize him from 1960s Johnny Quest, episodes of Outer Limits, lots of other things in the past. Victor Vic Perrin lost in 1989. Happy birthday to you. And for our remembrances, last but not least, happy birthday as well to Madge Sinclair. She was the Jamaican-born American actress who played the captain of the USS Saratoga in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, and also Captain Silva LaForge in the Next Generation seventh season episode Interface. Although she did not receive on-screen credit for the former role, she was the first female Star Trek captain to be seen in the history of Star Trek. Yeah, let that percolate for a minute. There you go. She's the first one, the first female captain. This is so crazy. Anyway, Madge Sinclair, happy birthday to you. And last on my list, but certainly not least, thank you, Jim, for letting me sling this one. Happy birthday to the very much alive and kicking and most amazing Kate Mulgrew, who is not Captain Saru of the USS Cerritos, despite what Jim has written in my notes here. Of course, she's known as Captain Catherine Janeway of the USS Voyager, ran for seven seasons. If I were to, I don't know, I guess pick words that that described this captain to me, I would say immovable. You know, she had her own kind of thing going on, and she was immovable. She was indelible. She was immutable. There were so many things that defined Captain Catherine Janeway, and I just think that Kate Mulgrew's performance of her is one of the best things that I've ever seen, honestly, on television. But Kate Mulgrew's talents do not stop there. We have seen her in many, many things. I think if you're going kind of back in time to the late 2010s, I guess you call it. We, of course, know her as Red from Orange is the New Black. If you go back even further in time, we get 33 episodes or something of SVU she was on. We get so many episodes, Star Trek Voyager, 168 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. But really, where did she put in most of her work? That's right, back in the soap opera days, people, she did 421 episodes of Ryan's Hope from 1975 to 1989. Luckily, she got all of her acting chops kind of worked out there, and then when we got her in Voyager, she was just amazing, and she was also, of course, amazing in Orange is the New Black. Thank you, Kate Mulgrew, for all of your Star Trek contributions. There are so many people...
Did you mention Mrs. Columbo?
Mrs. Columbo is another great thing, right? Like she's the one who kind of tried to bring that series into the new era with that Mrs. Columbo version. And it was good. It was good, man. I cannot fault Mrs. Columbo at all. So yeah,
totally.
Thank you, Kate Mulgrew, for all of the stuff that you've done, not only for Star Trek, but for television and whatnot. And I really like in my heart, you are one of the people who I would love to meet, while I still can. You've got lots of years left, hopefully. We are looking forward to all of the contributions you have. Star Trek Prodigy? Are you kidding me? I think Hologram Janeway is amazing. We get Star Trek Nemesis, where you get to play the Admiral for real. So many great Star Trek contributions and so many great other contributions. Thank you so much for everything. That does it for my birthdays. I'm going to pass this birthday candle, flaming birthday candle, on to Mr. Charles.
All right. Thank you, Eric. I'll try going through. I got four birthdays to do. Let's do a warm, happy birthday to Ian Alexander, American actor and Twitch streamer who played Gray Tal in the third, fourth, and fifth seasons of Star Trek Discovery. Happy birthday to Lisa E. Wilcock, actress who played Yuta in Star Trek's Next Generation, third season episode, The Vengeance Factor, who hails from Columbia, Missouri. This one definitely has got a long history. Happy birthday to Clint Howard, who played Balak in TOS's first season episode, The Corbinite Maneuver, Grady in DS9's third season episode, Past Tense Part 2, Mulk in Enterprise's first season episode, Acquisition, a creepy Orion in Discovery's first season episode, Will You Take My Hand?, and Buck Martinez in Star Trek Strange New World, second season episode, Under the Cloak of War. And yes, we do know him also as Ron Howard's brother. But he definitely has a lot, instead of Ron, who does a lot of directing, Clint's done a lot of work with Star Trek. And the last one on my list, but not least, a very happy birthday to Jack Quaid, American actress who plays Brad Boimler in Star Trek Lower Decks. He reprised his role in the live-action Star Trek Strange New World second season episode, Those Old Scientists. Great episode. And gonna miss Lower Decks. Paul, who's on your list?
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it. All right. First of all, let's go over to next-gen territory here and say happy birthday to wonderful actress Ashley Judd, who we remember. A lot of people are like, Ashley Judd was on Star Trek? Well,
yep.
Of course she was. She played a couple of different episodes in the fifth season where she was played Robin Leffler in both Darmok and The Game, and did the remarkable task of just by being next to him, making Wesley Crusher seem a lot cooler and less annoying.
True.
Because it's like, dude, you're able to hang with Ashley Judd. Maybe you're not such a dweeb.
Oh,
I don't know. So, you know, it was great. I think everybody liked this character, and I think we would have enjoyed having more Robin Leffler on the series, but she became a very hot commodity in motion pictures pretty quick. So I think that answers that. But happy birthday, Ashley Judd. You're pretty awesome. Happy birthday also to the great Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He, from Star Trek, played the Zindi reptilian Damron in Enterprise's third season episode, Carpenter Street. Another guy who just became incredibly popular, incredibly famous, really broke out on the Watchmen motion picture where he played the comedian back in 2009. And it wasn't long after that that he freaked everybody out and sold a million baseball bats with his turn as the arch nemesis Negan on The Walking Dead, embodying one of the most horrific villains in pop culture. So he's works a lot. He's on The Boys. He's on all kinds of stuff. Really cool individual. Happy birthday, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And I feel like I should be, for this next one, I should probably be doing some kind of, like, you know, I'm not worthy or some kind of bowing or something, right? Some kind of homage, because we're talking about the great, the legendary, the iconic Iggy Pop, okay? Iggy Pop, rock singer, songwriter, and occasional sometime actor who appeared in Deep Space Nine as Yelgrun in the sixth season episode, The Magnificent Ferengi. How great is it that Iggy Pop was on Star Trek. A lot of times these actors, these singers who, you know, wouldn't normally do a lot of acting work. Now, Iggy Pop's worked for John Carpenter, so he's a little bit of an outlier, but they just take the job because they love Star Trek and they want to be on it. And they just, you know, have their agent start ringing the phone. But yeah, Iggy Pop's done some cool movies, including some with John Carpenter. And oh my, I cannot believe that I am fortunate enough to have this next birthday on my list. Oh, hello. It's time to say happy birthday to George Takei, the legendary, iconic Japanese-American actor, best known, of course, for his role as Hikaru Sulu on the original series and just about every feature film worth its salt. George Takei is awesome. He is a force to be reckoned with. He's a playwright.
He is a advocate for social justice and equal rights, for civil rights, political action. He's just a great human being, and George has a wonderful sense of humor. I mean, you see him all the time. He'll be on, you know, various shows like the Howard Stern Show. He's, you know, self-deprecating. He'll make fun of himself, and he's very happy to you know, knock over those who are taking themselves a little too seriously, or perhaps perhaps who are like styling themselves as autocrats. George is the first one to try to playfully push them off their pedestals. So I think we need more George Takeis in the world. And he is George is like, what, 90 now? And he runs.
Well, do you remember, Paul, when he like first kind of took to social media? And I just remember him almost instantly becoming a force of nature on social media. And I think it's because it was when he was really starting to come out and just be really comfortable with his identity.
Yeah.
And his relationship with Brad, and then they got married, and like all of this stuff happened. And that to me is one of the greatest stories of the beginning of social media. Like George Takei is literally not only a Star Trek icon to me, he is a social media icon.
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And he's just, he doesn't hold back, right? It's like he's very out there with his sexuality, and just says, we should be accepting of everybody, you know, except Republicans. So I love George, man. I mean, I just looked it up. He's 87, and he runs around like a guy in his 40s. I mean, he's got so much energy. It's great. I mean, he's had huge success with the Allegiance, that play he wrote and acted in. Huge. It was,
which was great, by the way.
It was on the West End, right? In
yep.
In London. He even took it
yep.
over there. I mean, it's yep. just a huge, huge success. He's written books, and he's just a wonderful presence and a great force. I think a force for good, frankly. So your legend lives on, George, and we salute you, my friend, over here on Trek Talking. And with the minutes left on our show, I better pass this over to Jim as fast as I humanly can. Take it away, Jim.
Why, thank you very much, Paul, for that.
You're welcome.
So my birthdays are very strange because for the first time ever, every single birthday that I'm going to mention, this actor has been on this podcast. Is that not cool?
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, we want to say happy birthday to Noah Averbatch Katz. He's the actor who played Rin in Star Trek Discovery's third season episode, Scavengers, and Sanctuary, and There Is a Tie, former ex-husband of Mary Wiseman. Happy birthday to Noah. We also want to say happy birthday to Kate Vernon, the actress who played a member of Species 8472, impersonating Commander Valerie Archer in the Star Trek Voyager 5th season episode, In the Flesh. We also want to say happy birthday to Vadia Potenza, who played Spock at age 13 in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. He hails from New York, New York. And we had him on the podcast. And my God, I would love to have him on as a regular host because he is so cool.
He's
Go and check
cool.
out that podcast.
Yeah.
He loves classic sci-fi, particularly Battle Beyond the Stars and Logan's Run. So check it out. He was a lot of fun to talk. And the last one on my list, I always do the Klingons last. And boy, was she awesome. When we did our 500th show, because Star Trek V is the best Star Trek movie ever made, I decided we got to have someone from Star Trek V on our 500th show. And it was Spice Williams. Currently, she's known as Spice Williams Crosby. She's an action actress, stunt woman, and stunt coordinator who played the Klingon Vixis in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Did I mention the best movie ever? Check it out. But wait, there's more. I always got to save the biggest and best and flashiest birthdays for the end. Although he's no Klingon, he's a mere Vulcan, but we need to wish a happy birthday to our very own Charles, who has been with me on this podcast as a co-host for many, many, many rotations of the Earth. So happy birthday, Charles, and thank you for putting up with me for all these years, and this means that we have to hear from Weird Al.
Well, there's a punk in the alley, and he's looking for a fight. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto. ghetto with another mouth to feed. Seems that everywhere you look today there's misery and greed. I guess you know the earth is gonna crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if you think it's scary, if it's more than you can take, just blow out the candles and have a piece of cake. Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Wow!
Happy birthday, Charles. Truck Talking would not be what it is today if you hadn't come aboard. So happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
And
it's been a good several years.
It has been. It went by real, really, really quick. We went a little bit over, but we had a lot to cram in, but we got it all in there. So that is awesome. Next week, same bat time, same bat channel. We'll all be back, and we're going to be talking about Whistle Speak, which is the episode that's on tonight. So check that out, please. I want to say thank you to Paul for hanging out and Trek Talking with us tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Uncle Jim. We had fun. We got crazy.
and I apologize for Leia. She's only 4 months old, and she wants to be with me. And so you might have heard her barking and whining at the door during the podcast. I'm going to go take her out for a little walk when we get done. So Leia's fine, everybody. Don't you worry. I will mold her into the perfect little puppy dog by the time we get done. So I apologize. And I want to say thank you so much to Shannon for hanging out with us. It's been a long time, Shannon, but it was great to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I miss you guys. I'm glad I could call in.
We love you, Shannon.
I'm glad, too. We missed having you around. And thank you to Ryan for calling in as well. Thank you for joining us tonight, Ryan.
Yeah, you're welcome. I feel your pain. I got my dog, Justice, sitting next to me, too, kind of just yawning at me.
Just yawning at you. So, Ryan, before we go, I know you have started up a GoFundMe page, correct?
Yes.
So why don't we let our fans know really quickly how they can find that and how they can help out?
Well, it basically, my wife and I have set that up. I, over the last 2 years, has been dealing with type 2 diabetes, which is now converted to type 1. And it's been making me, work for 2 months, go off for 6, go back for 2. It's, just been a hassle. So we're just seeking for anybody who wants to help, to help us with whatever. I know if you search GoFundMe, you could probably find it by my name, Ryan. I do also have it on Facebook. Probably search it under my Facebook, Ryan Thorne. And we're just trying to see if we can get some help. That's all it is. That's all we're hoping for anyway.
And Ryan has been a part of our podcast from way back. He's a really great guy, and he really could use some help. And Star Trek fans are the best fans, so keep that in mind. I also want to say thank you to Charles and happy birthday for hanging out and Trek Talking with us.
Thanks, Charles. Thank you. It was fun missing Trek last week, so we got double dose tonight.
We got double disco tonight. And, of course, last but not least, thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek Talking with us as well. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Time to enable my cloak alert, whatever the hell that is.
just don't use the Ask IA thing, AI thing that popped up on Facebook because it's absolutely worthless.
I'll just
know,
say, if you type cloak alert into Google, you don't get much, brother. You don't get much.
You don't get much. All right, guys, and I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. And remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. Hailing frequencies are closed. I have to go and take Leia for a quick walk. So thank you very much, guys, and be good to each other. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good weekend.
Night, y'all.
Don't eat jelly green beans.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hello. You have reached the queue continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.